is the guest of the Winter King, said Vasya. Well, you should have brought back a prince's ransom, Alyosha said at once, and Vasya laughed. Day was breaking. A strange smell, hot and rank, crept between the tree trunks. Soloveï raced along steadily, ears forward. He was a horse for a god's child to ride, but Vasya's hands were empty, and she did not know how to fight. You must not be afraid, said Soloveï, and she stroked the sleek neck. Ahead loomed the great oak tree. Behind her, Vasya felt Alyosha tense. The two riders passed the tree and found themselves in a clearing, a place that Vasya did not know. The sky was white, the air warm, so that she sweated under her clothes. Soloveï reared, bugling. Alyosha clutched Vasya around the middle. A white thing lay prone on the muddy earth, while another shape lay heaving beneath it. A great pool of blood stood out around them. Above them, waiting, grinning, was the bear. But he was no longer a small man with scars on his skin. Now Vasya saw a bear in truth, but larger than any bear she had ever seen. His fur was patchy and lichen-colored. His black lips glistened around a vast, snarling mouth. A little grin appeared on those black lips when he saw them, and the tongue showed red between. Two of them, he said. All the better. I thought my brother had you already, girl, but I suppose he was too great a fool to keep you. Out of the corner of her eye, Vasya saw the white mare step into the clearing. Ah, no. Here he is, said the bear, but his voice had hardened. Hello, brother. Come to see me off? Morozko spared Vasya a quick, burning glance, and she felt an answering fire rising in her, power and freedom together. The great bay stallion was beneath her, the wild eyes of the frost demon there, and between them, the monster. She flung her head back and laughed, and as she did, she felt a jewel at her throat burn. Well, said Morozko to her wryly, in a voice like the wind, I did try to keep you safe. A wind was rising. It was a small wind, light and quick and keen. A little of the white cloud blew away overhead, and Vasya could glimpse a pure dawn sky. She heard Morozko speaking, softly and clearly, but she did not understand the words. His eyes fixed on something Vasya could not see. The wind rose higher, keening. Do you think to frighten me, Karachun? Said Medved. I can buy time, Vasya, said the wind in Vasya's ear. But I do not know how much. I would have been stronger at midwinter. There was not time. He has my stepmother, replied Vasya. I had forgotten. She too can see. Suddenly, she realized that there were other faces in the wood, at the brink of the clearing. There was a naked woman with long wet hair, and there was a creature like an old man, with a skin like the skin of a tree. There was the Vodyanoi, the river king, with his great fish eyes. The Polovik was there, and the Bolotnik. There were others, dozens. Creatures like ravens and creatures like rocks and mushrooms and heaps of snow. Many crept forward to where the white mare stood beside Vasya and Soloveï and clustered about their feet. Behind her, Alyosha gave a whistle of astonishment. I can see them, Vasya. But the bear was speaking too, in a voice like men screaming, and some of the Cherti went to him. The Bolotnik? The wicked swamp creature. And, Vasya felt her heart stop, the Rusalka. Wildness, emptiness, and lust in her strange, lovely face. The Cherti took sides, and Vasya saw all their faces intent. Winter King, Medved, we will answer. Vasya felt them all quivering on the cusp of battle. Her blood boiled. She heard their many voices. And the white mare stepped forward too, with Morozko on her back. Solovey reared and pawed the earth. "Go, Vasya," said the wind with Morozko's voice. "Your stepmother must live. Tell your brother his sword will not bite the flesh of the dead. And do not die." The girl shifted her weight, and Solovey took them forward at a flying gallop. The bear roared, and instantly the clearing fell into chaos. The Rusalka sprang upon the Vodyanoi, her father, and tore into his warty shoulder. Vasya saw the Leshy wounded, streaming something like sap from a gash in his trunk. Solovey galloped on. They came upon the great pool of blood and skidded to a halt. The Upir looked up and hissed. Anna lay gray-faced beneath her, caked with mud, not moving. Dunya was covered in gore and filth, her face streaked with tears. Anna breathed out one slow, gurgling sigh. Her throat was laid open. Behind them came a roar of triumph from the bear. Dunya was crouched like a cat, about to spring. Vasya locked eyes with her and slid off Solovey's back. "No, Vasya," said the stallion. "Get back up." "Lyoshka," said Vasya, not taking her eyes from Dunya. "Go fight with the others. Solovey will protect me." Alyosha slid from Solovey's back. "As if I'd leave you," he said. Some of the bear's creatures circled them. Alyosha cried a war cry and swung his sword. Solovey lowered his head like a bull about to charge. "Dunya," Vasya said. "Dunyashka." Dimly she heard her brother grunt as the edge of the battle found them. From somewhere there came a howl like a wolf's, a cry like a woman's. But she and Dunya stood in a little core of silence. Solovey pawed the earth, ears flat to his skull. "That creature does not know you," he said. "She does. I know she does." The look of terror on the Upir's face warred now with avid hunger. "I will just tell her she need not be afraid. Dunya, Dunya, please, I know you are cold here and you are frightened, but can't you remember me?" Dunya panted, all the light of hell in her eyes. Vasya drew her belt knife and dragged it deeply across the veins of her wrist. The skin resisted before it gave, and then the blood raged out. Solovey shied back instinctively. "Vasya!" cried Alyosha, but she did not heed. Vasya took a long step forward. Her blood tumbled down, scarlet in the snow, on the mud and on the snowdrops. Behind her, Solovey reared. "Here, Dunyashka," said Vasya. "Here, you are hungry. You fed me often enough. Remember?" She held out her bleeding arm. And then she had no more time to think. The creature seized her hand like a greedy child, fastened its mouth to her wrist, and drank. Vasya stood still, trying desperately to stay on her feet. The creature whimpered as it drank. More and more it whimpered, and then suddenly it flung her hand away and stumbled backward. Vasya staggered, light-headed, black flowers blooming at the edges of her vision. But Solovey was behind her, holding her up, nosing her anxiously. Her wrist had been worried as though it were a bone. Gritting her teeth, Vasya tore a strip from her shirt and bound it tight. She heard the whistling of Alyosha's sword. The press of fighting swept up her brother and drew him away. The Upir was looking at her with abject terror. Her nose and chin and cheeks were speckled and smeared with blood. The wood seemed to hold its breath. "Marina," said the vampire. And it was Dunya's voice. There came a bellow of fury. The hell light faded from the vampire's eyes. The blood cracked and flaked on her face. My own Marina, at last! It has been so long. Dunya, said Vasya, I am glad to see you. Marina, Marushka, where am I? I am cold. I have been so frightened. It is all right, said Vasya, fighting tears. It will be all right. She wrapped her arms around the death-smelling thing. You need not be frightened now. From beyond there came another roar. Dunya jerked in Vasya's arms. Hush, said Vasya, as to a child. Don't look. She tasted salt on her lips. Suddenly, Morozko was beside her. He was breathing fast, and he had a wild look to match Solovey's. You are a mad fool, Vasilisa Petrovna, he said. He caught up a handful of snow and pressed it to her bleeding arm. It froze solid, clotting the blood. When she brushed away the excess, she found the wound sheathed in a thin layer of ice. What has happened? Said Vasya. The Cherti stand, replied Morozko grimly. But it will not last. Your stepmother is dead, and so the bear is loose. He will break out now soon. Soon. The fighting had come back into the clearing. The wood spirits were as children beside the bear's bulk. He had grown. His shoulders seemed to split the sky. He seized the Polovic in vast jaws and flung it away. The Rusalka stood at his side, shrieking a wordless cry. The bear threw back his great shaggy head. Free! He roared, snarling, laughing. He seized the leshy, and Vasya heard wood splintering. You must help them then, snapped Vasya. Why are you here? Morozko narrowed his eyes and said nothing. Vasya wondered for a ridiculous instant if he had come back to keep her from killing herself. The white mare laid her nose against Dunya's withered cheek. I know you, the old lady whispered to the horse. You are so beautiful. Then Dunya saw Morozko, and a faint fear crept back into her eyes. I know you too, she said. You will not see me again, Avdotya Mikhailovna, I very much hope, said Morozko. But his voice was gentle. Take her, said Vasya quickly. Let her die in truth now, so that she will not be afraid. Look, already she is forgetting. It was true. The clarity had begun to fade from Dunya's face. And you, Vasya, Morozko said, if I take her, I must leave this place. Vasya thought of facing the bear without him, and she wavered. How long will you be gone? An instant? An hour? One cannot tell. Behind them, the bear called out. Dunya shook at the summons. I must go to him, she whispered. I must. Marushka, please. Vasya gathered her resolve. I have an idea, she said. It would be better. No, snapped Vasya. Take her away now, please. She was my mother. She seized the frost demon's arm with both hands. The white mare said you were a giver of gifts. Do this for me now, Morozko. I beg you. There was a long silence. Morozko looked at the battle beyond them. He looked back at her. For a flickering instant, his glance strayed into the trees. Vasya looked where he did and saw nothing. But suddenly, the frost demon smiled. Very well, Morozko said. Unexpectedly, he reached out and drew her close and kissed her, quick and fierce. She looked up at him wide-eyed. You must hold on then, he said, as long as you may. Be brave. He stepped back. Come, Avdotya Mikhailovna, and take the road with me. Suddenly he and Dunya were astride the white horse, and only a crumpled, bloody, empty thing lay in the snow at Vasya's feet. "Farewell," whispered Vasya, fighting the urge to call him back. Then they were gone, the white horse and her two riders. Vasya took a deep breath. The bear had thrown off the last of his attackers. Now he wore the scarred face of a man, but a tall, strong man with cruel hands. He laughed. "Well done," he said. "I am always trying to get rid of him myself. He is a cold thing, Dyavushka. I am the fire. I will warm you. Come here, little Vyedma, and live forever." He beckoned. His eyes seemed to drag at her. His power flooded the clearing, and the wounded Cherti shrank before him. Vasya breathed in a frightened breath, but Solovey was at her side. She felt his sinewy neck under her hand, and then, blindly, she clambered onto his back. "Better 1,000 deaths," she said to the bear. The scarred lip lifted, and she saw the gleam of his long teeth. "Come then," he said coldly. "Slave or loyal servant, the choice is yours, but you are mine either way." He was growing as he spoke, and suddenly the man was a bear again, with jaws to swallow the world. He grinned at her. "Oh, you are afraid. They are always afraid at the end. But the fear of the brave, that is best." Vasya thought her heart would beat its way out of her breast, but aloud she said, in a small, strangled voice, "I see the folk of the wood, but what of the domovoy and the banig and the vazila? Come to me now, children of my people's hearths, for my need is very great." She ripped the skin of ice off the wound in her arm so that her blood tumbled forth. The blue jewel was glowing beneath her clothes. There was an instant of stillness in the clearing, broken by the chime of Alyosha's sword and the grunts of the Cherti who still fought. Her brother was surrounded by three of the bear's people. Vasya saw his face intent, the gleam of blood on his arm and cheek. "Come to me now," said Vasya desperately, "as I ever loved you, and you loved me. Remember the blood I shed, and the bread I gave." Still, there was silence. The bear scraped the earth with his great forefeet. "And now you will despair," he said. "Despair is even better than fear." He put his tongue out like a snake, as though to taste the air. "Foolish girl," thought Vasya. "How could the household spirits come? They are bound to our hearths." She tasted blood, bitter and salty in her mouth. "We can at least save my brother," Vasya said to Solovey, and the horse bugled defiance. One of the bear's great paws flashed out, taking them by surprise, and the horse barely dodged. He backed, ears flat to his head, and the great paw drew back to strike again. Suddenly, all the domovie, all the bathhouse guardians and dooryard spirits from all the dwellings in Lesnaya Zemlya were thronging at their feet. Solovey had to pick up his hooves to keep from stepping on them, and then the vazila sprang onto Solovey's withers. The little domovoy from her own house brandished a live coal in one sooty hand. For the first time, the bear looked uncertain. "Impossible," he muttered. "Impossible. They do not leave their houses." The household spirits roared out strange challenges, and Solovey pawed the muddy earth. But then Vasya's heart sprang into her throat and seemed to hang there hammering. The Rusalka had borne Alyosha to earth. Vasya saw his sword go flying. She saw him freeze, entranced, looking up at the naked woman. She saw her fingers go round his throat. The bear laughed. "Stay where you are, all of you, or this one dies." "Remember," Vasya called to the Rusalka desperately, across the clearing, I threw flowers for you, and now I shed my blood. Remember! The Rusalka froze, perfectly still, except for the water running down her hair. Her hands around Alyosha's throat slackened. Alyosha struck out, renewing the struggle, but the bear was too near. Come on! Cried Vasya to Solovey, to all of her ragged army. Go! He is my brother! But at that moment, a great bellow of rage came from the other end of the clearing. Vasya glanced aside and saw her father standing there, his sword in his hand. The bear was twice and thrice the size of an ordinary bear. It had only one eye. Half its face was a mass of scars. The good eye gleamed the color of thin shadow on snow. It wasn't sleepy like an ordinary bear, but alight with hunger and giddy malice. Before the bear was Vasya, unmistakable, tiny before the beast, riding a dark horse. But Alyosha, his son, lay almost beneath the beast's feet, and the great mouth reached down. Pyotr bellowed, a cry of love and rage. The beast whipped his head around. So many visitors, he said. Silence for 1,000 lives of men, and then the world descends upon me. Well, I will not object. One at a time, though. First, the boy. But at that moment, a naked woman, green-skinned, water glittering on her long hair, shrieked and sprang onto the bear's back, clutching him with her hands and teeth. Next instant, Pyotr's daughter cried aloud, and the great horse charged, striking out at the beast with its forefeet. With them came all manner of strange creatures, tall and thin, tiny and bearded, male and female. They threw themselves together upon the bear, shrieking in their high, strange voices. The beast fell back beneath them. Vasya half-tumbled from the horse's back, seized Alyosha, and dragged him away. Pyotr heard her sobbing. Lyoshka, she cried. Lyoshka! The stallion struck out with his forefeet again and backed up, protecting the boy and girl on the ground. Alyosha blinked dazedly about them. Get up, Lyoshka, pleaded Vasya. Please, please! The bear shook himself, and most of the strange creatures were flung off. He lashed out with one paw, and the great stallion barely evaded the blow. The naked woman fell to the snow, water flying from her hair. Vasya threw herself over her half-conscious brother. Monstrous teeth reached for her unprotected back. Pyotr could not remember running, but suddenly he found himself standing, gasping, between his children and the beast. He was steady except for his pounding heart, and he held his broadsword two-handed. Vasya stared at him as at an apparition. He saw her lips move. Father! The bear skidded to a halt. Get you gone, he snarled. He stretched out a clawed foot. Pyotr turned it with his sword and did not stir. My life is nothing, said Pyotr. I am not afraid. The bear opened his mouth and roared. Vasya flinched. Still Pyotr did not move. Stand aside, said the bear. I will have the old witch's children. Pyotr stepped deliberately forward. I know no witches. These are my children. The bear's teeth snapped an inch from his face, and still he did not move. Get out, said Pyotr. You are nothing. You are only a story. Leave my lands in peace. The bear snorted. These woods are mine now. But the eye rolled wearily. What is your price? Said Pyotr. I too have heard the old tales, and there is always a price. As you like. Give me your daughter, and you will have peace. Pyotr glanced at Vasya. Their eyes met, and he saw her swallow hard. "That is my Marina's lastborn," he said. "That is my daughter. A man does not offer up another's life, still less the life of his own child." An instant of perfect silence. "I offer you mine," said Pyotr. He dropped his sword. "No!" Vasya screamed. "Father, no! No!" The bear squinted its good eye and hesitated. Suddenly Pyotr flung himself, empty-handed, at the lichen-colored chest. The bear acted on instinct. He batted the man aside. There was a horrible crack. Pyotr flew like a straw doll and landed face down in the snow. The bear howled and leaped after him, but Vasya was on her feet, all her fear forgotten. She screamed aloud in wordless fury, and the bear whipped round again. Vasya heaved herself onto Solovey's back. They charged the bear. The girl was weeping. She had forgotten she held no weapon. The jewel at her breast burned cold, beating like another heart. The bear grinned broadly, tongue lolling dog-like between its great teeth. "Oh, yes," it said. "Come here, little Viedma. Come here, little witch. You aren't strong enough for me yet, and never will be. Come to me and join your poor father." But even as he spoke, he was dwindling. The bear became a man, a little cringing man that peered up at them through a watering gray eye. A white figure appeared beside Solovey, and a white hand touched the stallion's straining neck. The horse put his head up and slowed. "No," shouted Vasya. "No, Solovey, don't stop." But the one-eyed man cringed down into the snow, and she felt Morozko's hand on hers. "Enough, Vasya," he said. "See, he is bound. It is over." She stared at the little man, blinking, dazed. "How?" "Such is the strength of men," said Morozko. He sounded strangely satisfied. "We who live forever can know no courage, nor do we love enough to give our lives. But your father could. His sacrifice bound the bear. Pyotr Vladimirovich will die as he would have wished. It is over." "No," said Vasya, pulling her hand away. "No." She pitched herself off Solovey. Medvyed cringed away, grumbling, but already she had forgotten him. She ran to her father's head. Alyosha had gotten there before her. He pulled aside his father's torn cloak. The blow had crushed Pyotr's ribs on one side, and blood bubbled up between his lips. Vasya pressed her hands to the wounded place. Warmth flared into her hands. Her tears fell onto her father's eyes. A hint of color tinged Pyotr's graying skin, and his eyes opened. They fell on Vasya and brightened. "Marina," he croaked. "Marina." The breath sighed out of him, and he did not take another. "No," Vasya whispered. "No." She dug her fingertips into her father's slack flesh. His chest heaved suddenly, like a bellows, but his eyes were fixed and staring. Vasya tasted blood where she'd bitten into her lip, and she fought the death as though it were her own, as though... A cold, long-fingered hand caught both of hers, leeching the warmth away. Vasya tried to wrench her hands free, but she could not. Morozko's voice wafted icy air across her cheek. "Leave it, Vasya. He chose this. You cannot undo it." "Yes, I can," she hissed back, breath catching in her throat. "It should have been me. Let me go." Then the hand was gone, and she spun round. Morozko had already drawn away. She looked up into his face, pale and indifferent, cruel, and just a little kind. "Too late," he said, and all around the wind took up the words, "Too late, too late." And then the frost demon had swung onto the white mare's back, up behind another figure that Vasya could only see out of the corner of her eye. "No," she said, running after them. "Wait, father!" But the white mare had already cantered off between the trees and disappeared into the darkness. The stillness was sudden and absolute. The one-eyed man slunk off into the undergrowth, and the charity disappeared into the winter forest. The Rusalka laid a dripping hand on Vasya's shoulder in passing. "Thank you, Vasilisa Petrovna," she said. Vasya made no answer. Solovey nuzzled her gently. Vasya did not heed. She was staring at nothing, holding her father's hand while it slowly turned cold. "Look," whispered Alyosha, hoarse and wet-eyed. "The snowdrops are dying." It was true. The warm, sickly, death-smelling wind had chilled, sharpened, and the flowers wilted down onto the hard earth. It was not yet midwinter, and their hour was months away. There was no clearing, no muddy space beneath a gray sky. There was only a huge old oak tree, its branches twisted together. The village lay beyond, now clearly visible, a stone's throw away. Day had broken, and it was bitterly cold. "Bound," said Vasya. "The monster is bound. Father did it." She reached out a stiff hand to pluck a drooping snowdrop. "How came father here?" said Alyosha in soft wonder. "He had such a look about him, as if he knew what to do and how and why. He is with mother now, by God's grace." Alyosha made the sign of the cross over his father's body, rose, went to Anna, and repeated the gesture. But Vasya did not move, nor did she answer. She put the flower in her father's hand. Then she laid her head against his chest and began, softly, to cry. Chapter 28. At the End and at the Beginning. They kept a night's vigil for Pyotr Vladimirovich and his wife. The two were buried together, with Pyotr between his first wife and his second. Though they mourned, the people did not despair. The miasma of death and defeat had gone from their fields and houses. Even the bedraggled remnants of half a burnt village, led past their gate by an exhausted Kolya, could not frighten them. The air bit gently, and the sun shone down, studding the snow with diamonds. Vasya stood with her family, hooded and cloaked against the chill, and bore the people's whispers. "Vasilisa Petrovna disappeared. She returned on the winged horse. She should have been dead." "Witch." Vasya remembered the touch of rope on her wrists, the cold look in Oleg's eyes, a man she had known since childhood, and she made a decision. When everyone else had gone, Vasya stood alone at her father's grave in the dusk. She felt old and grim and tired. "Can you hear me, Morozko?" she said. "Yes," he said, and then he was beside her. She saw a subtle weariness in his face, and she laughed a laugh that was half a sob. "Afraid I will ask for my father back? When I walked freely among men, the living would scream at me," Morozko replied evenly. "They would seize my hand, the mane of my horse. The mothers begged me to take them when I took up their children. Well, I have had enough of the dead coming back. Vasya fought for a tone of icy detachment, but her voice wavered. I suppose you have, he replied. But the wariness had gone from his face. I will remember his courage, Vasya, he said, and yours. Her mouth twisted. Always? When I am like my father, clay in the cold earth? Well, that is something to be remembered. He said nothing. They looked at each other. What would you have of me, Vasilisa Petrovna? Why did my father die? She asked in a rush. We need him. If anyone had to die, it should have been me. It was his choice, Vasya, replied Morozko. It was his privilege. He would not have had it otherwise. He died for you. Vasya shook her head and paced a restless circle. How did father even know? He came to the clearing. He knew. How could he find us? Morozko hesitated. Then he said slowly, he came home before the others and found you and your brother gone. He went into the woods to search. That clearing is enchanted. Until the tree dies, it will do all in its power to keep the bear contained. It knew what was needed better even than I. It drew your father to you once he entered the forest. Vasya was silent a long moment. She looked at him narrow-eyed, and he met her gaze. At last she nodded. Then, there is something I must do, Vasya said abruptly. I need your help. It had all gone wrong, thought Konstantin. Pyotr Vladimirovich was dead, killed by a wild beast on the threshold of his own village. Anna Ivanovna, they said, had run out into the woods in a fit of madness. Well, of course she did, he told himself. She was a madwoman and a fool. We all knew it. But he could still see her frantic, bloodless face. It hung before his waking eyes. Konstantin read the service for Pyotr Vladimirovich, scarce knowing what he said. And he ate at the funeral feast, hardly knowing what he did. But in the twilight, there came a knock at the door of his cell. When the door opened, his breath hissed out and he stumbled back. Vasya stood in the gap, the candlelight strong on her face. She was grown so beautiful, pale and remote, graceful and troubled. Mine. She is mine. God has sent her back to me. This is his forgiveness. Vasya, he said, and reached out to her. But she was not alone. When she slipped through the door, a dark-cloaked figure unfolded from the shadows at her shoulder and glided in beside her. Konstantin could see nothing of the face, save that it was pale. The hands were very long and thin. Who is that, Vasya? He said. I came back, Vasya returned, but not alone, as you see. Konstantin could not see the man's eyes, so sunk were they in his skull. The hands were of a skeletal thinness. The priest licked his lips.
Who is that girl?
Vasya smiled. Death, she said. He saved me in the forest. Or perhaps he did not, and I am a ghost. I feel a ghost tonight. You are mad, said Konstantin.
Stranger, who are you?
The stranger said nothing. Alive or dead, I have come to tell you to leave this place, said Vasya. Go back to Moscow, to Vladimir, to Tsargrad, or to hell, but you must be gone before the snowdrops bloom. My task, your task is done, said Vasya. She stepped forward. The dark man beside her seemed to grow. His head was a skull, and blue fires burned in the sockets of his sunken eyes. You will go, Konstantin Nikonovich, or you will die, and your death will not be easy. I will not. But he was pressed against the wall of his chamber. His teeth rattled together. You will, said Vasya. She advanced until she was near enough to touch. He could see the curve of her cheek, the implacable look in her eyes. Or we will see to it that you are mad as my stepmother was before the end. Demons, said Constantine, panting. A cold sweat broke over his brow. Yes, said Vasya, and she smiled, the devil's own child. The dark figure beside her smiled, too, a slow skull's grin. And then they were gone, silently as they had come. Constantine fell to his knees before the shadows on his wall. He stretched out supplicating hands. Come back, begged the priest. He paused, listening. His hands shook. Come back. You raised me up, but she scorned me. Come back. He thought the shadows might have shifted just a little, but he heard only silence. He will do it, I think, Vasya said.
Very likely, said Morozko. He was laughing. I have never done that at another's behest.
And I suppose you frighten people all the time on your own account, said Vasya.
I, said Morozko. I am only a story, Vasya.
And it was Vasya's turn to laugh. Then her laugh caught in her throat. Thank you, she said. Morozko inclined his head, and then the knight seemed to reach out and catch him up, fold him inside itself, so that there was only the dark where he had been. The household had gone to bed, and only Irina and Alyosha sat alone in the kitchen. Vasya glided in like a shadow. Irina had been crying. Alyosha held her. Wordless, Vasya sank onto the oven bench beside them and wrapped her arms around them both. They were all silent a while. I cannot stay here, said Vasya, very low. Alyosha looked at her, dull with sorrow and battle-weariness. Are you still thinking of the convent? He said. Well, you needn't think of it again. Anna Ivanovna is dead, and so is father. I will have my own land, my own inheritance. I will look after you. You must establish yourself as a lord among men, Vasya said. Men will look less kindly upon you when it is known that you harbor your mad sister. You know that many will blame me for all this. I am the witch woman. Has the priest not said so? Never mind that, said Alyosha. There is nowhere for you to go. Is there not? Said Vasya. A slow fire kindled in her face, easing the lines of grief. Solovey will take me to the ends of the earth if I ask it. I am going into the world, Alyosha. I will be no one's bride, neither of man nor of God. I am going to Kiev and Sarai and Tsargrad, and I will look upon the sun on the sea. Alyosha stared at his sister. You are mad, Vasya. She laughed, but the tears blurred her sight. Entirely, she said. But I will have my freedom, Alyosha. Do you doubt me? I brought snowdrops to my stepmother when I ought to have died in the forest. Father is gone. There is no one to hinder. Tell me truly, what is there for me here but walls and cages? I will be free, and I will not count the cost. Irina clung to her sister. Don't go, Vasya. Don't go. I will be good, I promise. Look at me, Irinka, said Vasya. You are good. You are the best little girl I know. Much better than I am. But, little sister, you don't think I am a witch. Others do. That is true, said Alyosha. He had also seen the villagers' black stares, heard their whispers during the funeral. Vasya said nothing. Unnatural thing, said her brother. But he was sad more than angry. Can you not be content? Men will forget about all this in time, and what you call cages is the lot of women. It is not mine,
said Vasya. I love you, Lyoshka. I love you both. But I cannot. Irina began to cry and clung closer. Don't cry, Irinka, added Alyosha. He was looking at his sister narrowly. She will come back, won't you, Vasya? She nodded once. One day, I swear it. You will not be cold and hungry on the road, Vasya? Vasya thought of the house in the woods, of the treasures heaped there, waiting. Not a dowry now, but gems to barter, a cloak against the frost, boots, all she needed for journeying. No, she said, I do not think so. Alyosha nodded reluctantly. Implacable purpose shone like wildfire in his sister's face. Do not forget us, Vasya. Here. He reached up and drew off a wooden object, hanging on a leather thong about his neck. He handed it to her. It was a little carven bird with worn, outspread wings. Father made it for mother, said Alyosha. Wear it, little sister, and remember. Vasya kissed them both, her hand closed tight around the wooden thing. I swear it, she said again. Go, said Alyosha, before I tie you to the oven and make you stay. But his eyes too were wet. Vasya slipped outside. Just as she touched the threshold, there came her brother's voice again. Go with God, little sister. Even when the kitchen door swung shut behind her, it was not enough to muffle the sound of Irina's weeping. Solovey was waiting for her just outside the palisade. Come, Vasya said. Will you bear me to the ends of the earth, if the road will take us so far? She was crying as she spoke, but the horse nuzzled away her tears. His nostrils flared to catch the evening wind. Anywhere, Vasya. The world is wide, and the road will take us anywhere. She swung onto the stallion's back, and he was away, swift and silent as a night-flying bird. Soon enough, Vasya saw a fir grove, and firelight glancing between the trees, spilling gold into the snow. The door opened. Come in, Vasya, Morozko said. It is cold. This is Kathleen Gatti. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Bear and the Nightingale by Catherine Arden. This program was directed by Bruce Mann. Executive producer, Dan Musselman. Text copyright, 2017, by Catherine Arden. Production copyright, 2017. Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.